Well, we have a few more empty seats this morning than we did last week. Quite a group of visitors, but I'm glad you're filling some of them. Good to have Mary back with us, and good to have Bethany here again this morning. And all of you hopefully know you are most welcome. Aren't we having a beautiful fall? My goodness. I stepped out one morning this week, and we have a lot of hard maple trees in our woods, and the colors were just incredible, and pulled around, and the sunrise. If I'd have thought, I'd have put that on my computer for you to see this morning. There's nothing quite like a sunrise over the sawmill. You just have to see it. Anyway, I have enjoyed the weather. Well, Luke chapter 12 is where we will focus this morning. A few thoughts here. In reading this week and thinking about various things, my mind was going down certain lines. And so I posed the question this morning, how do the words of Jesus shape your life? Now, we live in a big, complicated world in a lot of ways. And as we encounter people and things and events, we realize that people operate on a lot of different levels, a lot of different programs going on in their minds. It should occur to us occasionally, well, what's going on in my mind? And how is my mind working? How is my mind changed and shaped by the words of Jesus? That's what we're reading this morning, right? Things that Jesus said, things that Jesus did. Are these the things that shape my mind? There's a lot of influences in life. I think if you probably think back in your life to some of your youngest memories, you remember some event, some person perhaps that did something that made a mark on your mind. And perhaps that has changed everything about your perspective. People affect us. A lot of times older people in our life. It's interesting, as you go through school, you tend to know the people that are a little bit older than you, but not so much the younger, right? And so you're influenced by those that have been more mature, so they got to do things. They were perhaps up front in church. They were driving before you were. All the things that you look forward to in life, they were there. So they make a mark on your mind. As a side note, at some point it became imperative in my mind to be very conscious of the fact that I have an influence. I have an influence whether I want to or not. I don't live invisibly. I'm affecting those, and in particular affecting those who come after me in a marked way that I might not be thinking about. But this morning we want to think about the words of Jesus. Do they shape your life? Most anywhere you go in church circles, the language of, well, you have to trust Jesus is used. That's pretty common in church, trusting. But it's important to connect the dots as to what that actually means. It's not just something you say to say the right thing. It actually means something. And if you trust Jesus, then his words will shape your life. Because you look to his words as the foundation for how you understand things. And that's an important connection to make. Am I allowing him through his sayings to shape my life? Jesus,
reflects on this reality a little earlier in Luke, Luke chapter 6, verse 46. He says, "And why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He's like a man which built a house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood rose, the stream beat vehemently against that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." And so this is a well-known metaphor for the result of hearing and doing the words of Jesus. We have just gone through a period of weather history that really put a lot of structures to test in certain parts of the country. A lot of them didn't survive. In some cases, it wasn't just the foundation that was a problem. The forces were so great, they were just destroyed because they didn't have the strength. But Jesus here compares those who hear his sayings and do them to having a foundation which is built on a rock. He also draws the opposite picture. He says, "But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built a house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great." Now, I grin when I say that word because my sister has made a big deal about how you're supposed to say it. How am I supposed to say that word? You don't say the H. It's kind of like herbs and herb, huh?
Yeah, vehemently.
Okay. And to which I respond, why did they put an H there?
I learned something today.
Did you?
Yeah, I pronounced with
an H. And me too. Maybe she's wrong.
My husband's
one that told me, and she says it's from Latin somehow. Okay. It's the
silent Latin H. No, there's just an H in the Latin. There's a pronounced H in the Latin.
Oh, we just lose it when we borrow it from Latin. Okay. Vehemently, how's that? Just lay off the H.
Vehemently. Vehemently.
Okay, and of course, what we mean is it just it does it like crazy, right? So it just beats like crazy. Maybe we should replace that word with like crazy. Because I think I know how to say that. The point is there are two options here, right? There's not neutral ground. You either hear and do or hear and don't do. There's a third option, of course. You might not hear. But he's considering having heard. And there are consequences. So in reflecting on my life, I ask myself, am I hearing and am I doing? Am I responding to what Jesus says? I want to be sure that I do. I don't like the end of this house. Yes?
I can't help but recognize, too, there the options. Either the storms will come or the storms will come.
Yes.
That's just a given for everybody. But sometimes it's easy to think of yourself as following the words of Jesus because you acknowledge them. You know that's the right thing. But the proof is when the storm comes, you might recognize things about yourself. Like, yes, in this area I'm trusting, but in this area I guess I'm not trusting. I was trusting something else. So it reveals what you're trusting in.
And, of course, to some extent, the references to the quote, storm of God's judgment in the end. You know, being able to stand at that time on the rock of Jesus Christ is the most critical of all. But yes, certainly the storms of life do come. You think of some of these poor people in North Carolina in particular who didn't have flood insurance. I mean, I don't have flood insurance. I live on a hill. And they felt likewise, why would you have insurance for a flood here in the middle of North Carolina? Sometimes storms come and you're not expecting. And I'm more likely to be hit by a tornado than I am a flood. If I get hit by a flood where my house is, I'm going to look for Noah because he's probably close by. Because it would take a pretty serious one. A little more understandable when you have these valleys and mountains that focus water. When you have that kind of rain, it's going to go somewhere. But anyway, yes, the storms of life, they do come. And we want to be on the side of having responded to the words of Jesus seriously. We must allow the sayings of Jesus to have a formative effect on how we think about God, ourselves, and others. Okay, so this is a kind of thinking that we perhaps don't do every day, but the way that your mind is formed, how do you process things? How do you think about God? What do you think about God? How do you think about yourself in relationship to God, in relationship to others? Who am I? What is my biggest concern? How should I respond to the world around me? The way your mind is formed in these areas needs to be in response to the sayings of Jesus. If you're trusting him, right? If you're trusting in his teaching, his sayings, then the very formation of your mind is a result of those things. So being conscious of this is important. So like in America, you often hear touted what they call the American dream. It's to some extent a fantasy, but nevertheless, it is a part of a lot of people's thought process that this is what life is like here. You know, this is a place where I can get ahead. This is a place where I can succeed, where I can flourish, where I can get married, have kids, have a house, have a nice car, maybe a swimming pool, who knows. All these things that form in people's mind as images of what life is all about. Well, as Christians, your life isn't formed, your mind isn't formed by an image of the American dream. It's formed by the sayings of Jesus. What does Jesus say? What does he teach? How does his input into the world form my mind? James 1 reflects on this situation. He says, "But be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was." Now, I wish he would have said woman there, but he said man. Anyway, we all occasionally look in the mirror, right? And see somebody looking back at us. And it's easy to forget just what that person is like when you get away from the mirror. But he says, don't be a hearer only and not a doer. So now back to Luke chapter 12. We have some verses here. We read them last week, and I just want to look at them a little bit further in light of this formative idea, allowing them to form your mind. Jesus says, there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever you have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light, and that which you have spoken in the ear in closets shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. And I say unto you, my friends, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. But I will forewarn you what whom you shall fear. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. And so now I ask us to think about this passage in light of how should this form your mind? In what ways? Did Jesus say this to just terrorize you? Is this something that's just intended to put you in fear of God? Can anybody think of any way that these verses should form your mind and how you think?
Keith, could you remind us what metanoia means from the Greek?
Okay, so now, just in general?
Yeah. Isn't that what we translate to mean repent?
Yes.
A change of mind.
Right. I was reflecting on this verse to see if there was, I'd missed the word somewhere here, but yes. So when we talk about repenting, which was the first message essentially you hear out of both John the Baptist and Jesus in the Bible, repent. It is a word which in the Greek literally means, first of all, a change of mind, literally metanoia, change of mind. Which emphasizes, I think, what you're trying to do is to show how important that element is in our walk, how central it is.
And that's what the words of Jesus do. They change our mind from being focused on the world around us. I was thinking, okay, if I'm to fear the one who has my eternal destiny in mind, what would be competing with the other? One of the big competing voices or forces would be other people. Because as humans, we tend to do things and say things around other people, to people, involve other people that we would never say or do by ourselves.
Yes.
And it's by our interactions with other people that we learn about ourselves. And we compare who we are, not just our actions, but our motives, with the words of Jesus. And this is a wake-up call to not just march along with this life, to get along and to try to impress others and have friends and have people say nice things about us, but to think eternally.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we're living for.
Okay. So this emphasizes the importance of putting an eternal value on all of your life, doesn't it?
It sobers you to, in the process of going there, about eternity, it just makes you realize it's serious. Life is serious. Not that you never have fun, not that you never laugh, I'm not saying that, but it's just, it's easy to kind of live on the surface of life and just do whatever appeals to you. And maybe, like Bruce says, you're kind of pushed around by the influence of other people, but you don't really have depth. You don't have that foundation. This pushes you to consider how serious life actually is.
It is fascinating. I see these very strong, big men who physically are an impressive force, be it a very weak character. They're afraid of what people think of them. And in our culture, it's these sports heroes. And yet, they're afraid to do what is right eternally. They would be afraid of what people think of the movie stars and the rock stars. So troubled by what people think of it appears, and trying to live an image, oftentimes turning to substance abuse, have many addictions, and the relationships fail. This is a call, and it's something I find myself having to do every day, because the world around me says this is what matters. and wants to pull me into it, whether it's at the college or just living life. The things of this world, well, sometimes called the flesh, pulls me to this world. I have to remind myself, no, this is not what is important. I'm serving a greater cause, a greater good, beautiful God, that He has a better plan for me than this. It takes conscious effort every day. It's not as though I can coast.
Mm-hmm. That struck me when you brought up the repent concept, how I don't just repent and then I can coast. It is because I'm in flesh, because I'm surrounded by people, flesh, I'm constantly having to say, okay, Lord, in this situation, what is your mind? What is your heart? In this situation, and change what I would naturally, potentially do or think to what, to the best of my ability, I think He would want me to think and do.
Okay, so you guys are hitting on something right now that I wanted to look at one point this morning, and that is that the very nature of life is that it's moving. There is movement. There are various theological positions that suggest that once you've reached some plateau in your relationship with God, you're good, and you don't have to worry about anything anymore. The problem is that flies directly in the face of the reality of how life works. We're always headed somewhere. Always. No matter where we've been, we're headed somewhere. It may be to lunch, but it's somewhere. And that direction is determined by how our mind is currently formed. Nothing survives in this world without maintenance. Even if you have reached some kind of plateau, you don't stay there without maintenance, without intentionality, without direction. And any theological position that suggests that you're permanently frozen by some past decision is just not a reflection of reality. So that doesn't apply directly to this passage in my mind, but you guys got there, and that's great, because I think that's an important thing to realize. God doesn't have to come down from heaven and reveal that to you. If you just look at the experience in life, this is how life is. This is how life works. There is movement. There is direction. And God cares about where I'm going.
And I just want to add one little thing. I know it's not that scripture, but I remember as a young girl, I was so lazy by nature, just lazy. And I wanted to coast. I wanted to just kind of check the box, you know, and then do my fun stuff. And I was miserable. But then what I want to stress is that it's an adventure when you lock arms with Jesus and you start walking the path. It's an adventure. It's not a drudgery. It's not a restriction that is not good, you know, in any way. It actually opens up life. And an amazing adventure. That's all I want to say.
Okay, and I think connected to that, I can connect that to this passage. And I do that by looking at another thing I think gets stressed here. Jesus has just come off a discussion about the Pharisees and the lawyers. And one of his biggest criticisms of them was, you're just pretending. You're not true. You're not real. And so then he continues, there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed. There is nothing hid that shall not be known. And so on. What does this say about the importance of truth? Of truth, just simple, what is real, what is true. Doesn't this elevate it in a significant way? I think as followers of Christ, we are called to pursue truth, wherever it might lead. and even truth about ourselves. Some people are eager to learn the truths about you or somebody else, but what about me? I'm going to skip this because I have some of the passages down here that I've set up for that I want to talk about now. The psalmist says some things, I think, which reflect this perspective. Psalm 7, we have these words: "The Lord shall judge the people. Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to mine integrity that is in me." And then I think along the same mindset in Psalm 139, he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." So this way that Jesus forms our mind is a way that brings us to a point where we don't assume that we're right. There's a good chance we're not, right? We weren't born right. It doesn't just happen by accident. And in following him, one of our prayers should be, "Lord, show me me." Right? Not just everybody else. I don't just want to know where everybody else is wrong. I want to know me. I want to know the truth about me. And then lead me in the way everlasting. That's a pretty powerful concept. And I think it should be a part of our formed mind in following Christ. He wants to lead us in truth. Not just in the way of truth, of following him, but he wants to lead us to see the truth about ourselves so that we can, with intentionality, follow him and not blindly.
Keith, that reminds me, last month I was talking to a pastor, and he seemed to be a genuine person, and we talked about genuineness, and he said, "People like genuine people." I thought about that. Yeah, they do, even if they're dishonest, and they're not living the way they should. They like genuine people. I think about the twins, our sons. And even when they were far away from God, they had respect for genuine people. Mm-hmm. And for us as followers of Jesus, when we run into and encounter a genuine person that's honest and has this attitude, we feel a kindred spirit.
Right.
And there's a fellowship and the presence of God in that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And also think about this, where there's action on the person saying, "Lord, know my heart, see if there's any good way." There's a purposefulness in this prayer, in this attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, as God would show this to me, I need to be purposeful in incorporating that into my life. In most cases, it doesn't just happen with a zap, but it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, we were patient with ourselves and with other people, because when we encounter other people that are on their journey, they may not be where we are. We remember that Jesus was patient with me.
Mm-hmm.
Others were patient with me. I need to be patient with others. But it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have to go through it and learn, it helps me to think, okay, how can I walk with others and help them? There's a process.
Mm-hmm. You know, by contrast, we sometimes encounter people who their position is dependent on what's currently popular. That's the reality. They hold their finger up in the wind, and whichever way the wind's blowing, it's like, "Well, yeah, that's where I'm going." And I don't know. Does that appeal to you? You.
I don't see this, anybody in this group respecting that.
No. No. It doesn't take long on reflection to realize truth matters, integrity matters, and these are the things that Jesus wants to form our minds around. And so this passage in Luke 12 here that speaks of uncovering the truth shall be known. I think that one of the things we should take from that is the importance of truth. God cares about the truth. And so I should too. And I should live as though I know that he already knows the truth. And darkness doesn't cover it. Closets don't cover it. Whispering doesn't cover it. He knows. It's kind of comical to us whenever we teach a child to whisper, right? And so they think that if I whisper, nobody else can hear but the person I'm talking to. And they whisper really loudly. That also sometimes happens as we get older. We think we're not heard because we don't intend to be heard, right? I don't want you to hear this, so you don't. But this mindset that Jesus wants to be a part of us is a realization that I'm living in the light of God's knowledge, and his eyes see everything. And it's in that realm that I want to act and to behave.
Keith,
this
also reminds me, thinking about how this changes a person. We as human beings really don't like to speak up and go against the flow. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it puts us at odds with other people. And with a little bit of life experience, we understand we may face some blowback, some pushback, and it may be negative. It may cost us. And it makes me think, okay, going back to my early walk with Jesus, I faced this. I wasn't real comfortable telling other people about Jesus, but it just came to the point where it was impressed on me. I had to.
Uh-huh.
It was that choice in the road, which way was I going to go? Am I going to do what I understand to be right, or try to protect myself and ruin my relationship with Jesus? Well, the words and the message, such as what we're reading, what were on my mind, be more concerned about what God thinks than what people think. So that helped me to go ahead and speak out. Laura and I were having a discussion just in the last week, and she said, you don't really care what people think. I said, well, that's not so true. I do. It's just part of it's my family culture, just being blunt and just saying it as it is. But also, if I understand what I'm saying is right, and I sense that it needs to be said, and it doesn't matter what anybody else says, even if it's against everyone. God has called me, he's called me to be a light, a speaker for him, and to take him wherever I go. And it doesn't matter what other people say. If the motive of my heart is, I understand this to be right, and this is the time to speak up and say it.
Right. And I've known you long enough, Bruce, to know that that is a factor in your thought. Is this the right time? Is this the most effective place? So I think early on we're just so frozen about the prospect of speaking out that it's just the issue of will we do it or won't we do it. But as you gain some experience in life, you realize, okay, sometimes there is a strategy to this. I want to be effective and not just heard. And so God understands that. He has a lot of strategy in what he does in dealing with human beings. And so we ask for his wisdom in following the wisest path always.
We have some examples even from the Old Testament. Esther, Daniel, David, some of the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph. We just have a heritage, a biblical heritage. People who spoke out even if it costs them their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at that, you look at the people that gave everything, and how am I any different? How am I going to expect any less from me?
Mm-hmm. Well, he will be with you in those times to strengthen and embolden you.
Something's kind of eating on me.
Okay, what's eating on you, Laura?
Well, and I don't know that this is what you've prepared to talk about, so I'm not saying we have to talk about this right now.
Oh, we can go anywhere.
The American dream.
Yes.
My mind started pondering, and not that I've never thought about that, of course, but I can imagine just struggling as a young person, especially if you don't feel like a call to the mission field to sacrifice even having a home of your own, or don't feel called to be a minister who has a parsonage or whatever, you get a job and it's very easy to fall into that or to have the appearance of that, even if in your heart and mind that's not where you are. I'm just trying to reconcile that once again in my own mind. And I mean, I remember thinking many times, Kurt and I built our house too big, and so we tried to redeem it by using it for the church. You know, because people looking on would think, wow, you have put a lot of money in something in the earth. I mean, you see what I'm saying? That there are possibilities of...
No, we're happy for you to pay taxes on that house. It's not a problem.
Something that you can't be legalistic about and just say, you know, you have to be, because we're trying to follow Jesus. Well, Jesus didn't have a home. And so you could go all different places, like the monks, you know, and just trying to sort through that in my mind again, if somebody would ask me. And it doesn't mean that I did everything perfectly. I'm not suggesting that.
Okay, so it's a big world. God, it seems, calls some people to specific jobs, and he makes that known to him. I think as Christians, one thing we should always all spend a period of time in our life doing is being very, we should spend all of our life doing this, but particularly as we're making certain decisions, we should be totally open to whatever he has and seeking it. For instance, there are certain times in life where the decisions you make have everything to do with where you end up. When you are a junior or senior in high school, the question is, are you going to go to college? And where are you going to go? That's a time where you need to be particularly sensitive to the leading of God. Does God have direction for me at this time? Because that will determine the next X number of years of your life where you're going to be occupied. Then, of course, as you proceed through the different stages of life, there are choices you make that have a huge, huge impact on everything thereafter. Those need to be times when you specifically seek God's active will for your life. And it turns out there are times when, though you seek it, you won't get an answer in the clouds or chiseled in stone. And you're back to the position of, I'm going to walk in trusting Jesus. In light of what Jesus has taught, in light of what I understand he wants of me, I'm going to make certain decisions. One thing that is a part of every Christian life is being productive. Wherever you find yourself, being a servant to all. Do we need people like that in this world? Can I hear a yay? We do. And that should never be depreciated to a low position of importance. People who are his hands and feet in a lost world. Whether or not they're up front, whether or not they have a position of recognized leadership, they can be leaders in the world leading people to Christ. That's a huge, huge need. Instead of having everybody competing for the top jobs, shall we say, which are not all they're cracked up to be, I might add, just accepting the will of God
to follow in the steps of Jesus in my life, wherever it is. There is no greater calling.
But I would say that, just as an example, in my own mind, you know, you establish a home, and you can get in on a treadmill of, oh, but I have to have this now, and then I have to have this, and then I have to, and you can get at any point along the way, once you make some decisions, it can possess you, and you can walk away from having the mind of Christ.
And that is exactly why we started out by stressing that you're always going somewhere. There's always movement. So whatever kind of battles you've fought and won or fought and lost, there's today. Where are you going now? Is he the center of your focus now? Are you living in the mind that he has formed in you now? And so, yeah, if you become focused on what would I like to have, right? Where's the catalog? Well, we don't do catalogs anymore. Where's the web page? I can search, find in an instant what will make me happy now. Which is not to say that you don't have things in life that are perfectly permissible to do. So I went to tighten a bolt yesterday, and I looked high and low, but I don't own a 35-millimeter wrench. See, if I here got a 35-millimeter? It's pretty big. It's about an inch and a half. And so I need that, okay, to fix what I need to fix. So I got on Amazon and I ordered it. I'll have it Wednesday. Now that's a real blessing in that case, but it didn't fulfill any kind of dream in my mind, but it was a want that, yeah, this is something that needs to be a part of my arsenal of tools in order to do what I need to do. So there's not a problem with improving your life. I have a whole list of things I want to do to improve my life in terms of the mechanics. Whenever I bind down the logs on my log truck, certain types of loads take more binders, and I don't have a good place to hook them. And so we have to do odd things in order to make it work. Well, that gets to be a hassle after a while. And with just a little bit of welding, I could fix it, but I haven't had time to do that. But that's an improvement in life that I can live without. It's legitimate. I judge that it's a legitimate. My faith in Christ allows me to make those kind of improvements in my life without feeling like I'm indulging on myself.
But this walk of trust definitely calls me to continually monitor myself, you know, before him. And the
right.
Lord, is this the best thing for me right now? And that's one thing I have.
Right. Now, I could also fix that problem by just having a brand new truck and hiring somebody to do it so I didn't have to do it. But that's a little extravagant, right? I can't afford that. And so that's not a part of my dream. I just want a little bit of time so I can weld something on that I can hook to.
And that's all, yeah, I can see how that fits into the walk of trust.
So it doesn't give you the answer in every situation, except the answer is in you reflect on the mind that Christ is forming in you. How does this fit in? Is this part of improving the world and from his point of view? Does this improve my service?
And there's a beauty in his love, his kindness toward us when we are seeking him, that we don't have to be paralyzed with every decision. I mean, we can be, to the best of our understanding, at this moment we make that a decision, and then we can rest it with him, and if he wants us to do something different at the next point, you know, in that even a similar situation, we can trust him to guide us and through his word continually form us Because I think some people who are really sensitive, I've known people in the past who are so sensitive and you're just paralyzed because they don't know how to walk forward without, well, they're just fearful that they'll do the wrong thing. And
yeah, and you know, this is a very valid conversation. And I suppose we could go that step and say, okay, as Christians, can we justify ever doing anything just because it is enjoyable? Mary says, huh? Both Marys agree on this. That's good. Well, I do too, but I guess I'm pausing to think, is that a valid conclusion? Where are we at there? How does that work into the bigger scheme of things? And to what extent, you know, is it okay to go head over heels in debt to do something you think will be enjoyable?
Probably not, because there's definitely guidance in the scripture about being what's the word?
Stupid.
No. The word from the back.
With anything, you can temperate. Being temperate, being
yeah. So it's a measured, considered decision and choice, and you realize, and you know, one thing that changes all those things is when Jesus forms your mind, your wants change, right? Your fantasies change. What you think will make you happy actually changes.
But some things take some time.
They do take time.
Yeah.
And sometimes he lets us learn those things by burning our fingers.
Yeah. We don't even realize sometimes we're trying to get happiness out of something.
Right.
Until after we realize that it made me happy.
Right.
Keith, your point that life moves is such an important part of this kind of conversation, because you can't just figure out, okay, what is right and what is wrong. So, you know, is this right or is it a sin? Mm-hmm. But is this right for me right now? And then I can't just apply that across the board to everybody. Like, I have this figured out and you're doing the wrong thing. Because they don't have the light that you have, or they might be in a different place in life, or in 2 years, it might not be okay for you, or it might
yeah.
be... It's not, and not to make everything relative, but there are a lot of different things going on.
Mm-hmm. Makes me think of the appropriateness of the music I played for my little ones versus when they were teenagers. You know, there's an appropriate time to play little ones.
Yeah. Well, I think I've shared with you all before my insights about boats, right? So as a young person, you think, oh, man, I wish I had a boat. Let me tell you don't want a boat.
But if you want one, you can get one. He's not forbidding it.
Number one, if you got a boat, you got to have a trailer. If you got a boat trailer, you got to have lights that work. Lights never work on a trailer. Especially if you immerse it in water occasionally. And then you got to have it inspected, right? And then it's got to be maintained. Boats out in the sun disintegrate. It's just a nightmare. Don't get a boat. Just don't get a boat. But I do love being on a boat. It's kind of neat.
Sailboat.
You got a sailboat? Okay. But my perspective about boats has changed a lot from when I was young. Okay, so
now my goal is to have a friend with a boat.
No, that's right. That's right. That fixes a lot of that. Life educates us, and the important thing is where you're headed, right? Where I'm headed right now. And it's not going to be the same answer for everybody. The important thing is your heart and your relationship to Jesus in the process.
Keep this discussion as an example of how we affect our mind, who we surround ourselves with. Showing up on Sunday morning and hearing other voices, people who are intent in following Jesus and surrendered to Him.
Mm-hmm.
And not just surrendered to Him in word, but in life. What is best? That's a question I ask myself. What is best? Not just what is good, but what is best? And I hear the testimonies and see the lives of others. That challenges me, inspires me, challenges my thinking. It's just like you said, the pursuit, I don't know if it was said this way, but wanting to do things that are enjoyable, that in itself doesn't seem bad. But how do we apply that? What's the context? That becomes important. And so as I listen to people, I think about, okay, what is best? What does God want me to do? And as you mentioned, sometimes we burn our fingers. Life's a big experiment. You try this. Oh, that didn't work out so well. Remind yourself, don't go there again. And God allows that, and we learn from it, and hopefully are strengthened by it, and we can encourage others. And I can say to the friend, I tried this. You might not want to do that. But being genuine.
That's right. And so I think this passage does very much point us to the importance of truth, of living in a mind that is committed to and pursuing the truth, not just about things in general, but about ourselves, knowing that God knows already. Okay, so we're flat out of time. And so I was going to ask then, how do these words that we just read about fearing Him, about this nonstop pursuit of truth, how are they affected by what Jesus follows them with? The five sparrows for two farthings. Not one is forgotten before God. The very hairs of your head. And so next week we'll try to pick up here and think about, well, does this cancel it all out? Because for some people, it does. For some people, their understanding of the gospel is that, okay, God's paid for all my problems, and now I'm free. And they're even free from an ongoing concern about truth. So we'll consider that next week. Thank you for your kind attention.
Just what I need. Oh, yes, he knows. My Jesus knows when I am burdened. He knows how much my heart can bear. He lifts me up when I am sinking and brings me joy beyond compare. My Jesus knows just what I need. Oh, yes, He knows just what I need. He satisfies and every need supplies. Yes, He knows just what I need. My Jesus, my friends seem to forget me. When skies are dark, when hope is gone, by faith I feel His arms about me and hear Him say, you're not alone. My Jesus knows just what I need. Oh, yes, He knows just what I need.